Hi there, thanks for listening in to Season 4, Episode 25 of Heart of Conservation. I'm Lalita Krishnan, bringing you stories from the wild that keep us connected to our natural world. You can read the show notes for this podcast on my blog, Earthy Matters. Today I'm speaking to Rajini Mani, a documentary filmmaker with Elephant Corridor Films, which is a Bangalore-based creative agency. Currently, she's working on Colonies and Conflict, a film that examines the state of wild bees in a fast-developing Indian landscape. So thank you so much for joining me on Heart of Conservation.
Thank you for inviting me.
My pleasure.
I'm really happy, to have this conversation with you.
Great.
I think that you were quite interested in my work, when we chatted, so I was quite excited to speak with you.
Thank
as well.
Thank you. Yeah. So Rajini, as a of all the creatures and critters in the world, what got you interested in bees?
So it's not like I was an insect lover from my childhood or anything like that. What got me really interested was something that was really current, which was happening, which I was observing around me, which was bothering me. And essentially, it was these big beehives that you see in the cities. And in Bangalore, we have plenty of those on balconies. And we have, the management is called for removing these honeybees hives. And that basically bothered me, the way it was being done by spraying pesticides. And it was like so many hives in these high-rise apartments that I was observing all the time. And that disturbed me a lot. And I was trying to basically find out ways to kind of protect it. And I got interested in the story, in the bees. Mm-hmm. And I started researching. And that's how I was converted. Now I absolutely love bees and I love insects. So, but I was like everybody else. If you think of insects, humans are generally, we are not very fond of insects, I was one of those.
So not only did you get over your fear, you started loving them.
There was no fear per se, but, there was some disgust, to be very honest, but there was because insects, we generally, for me, it would be cockroaches, maybe.
All right.
So we are generally disgusted by cockroaches and we try to kind of get rid of it. And then, bees are there. We understand pollination. We studied it in school. But we don't really now come to think of it with all the, research that I have done and I've tried to understand it. We've really not even touched the tip of the iceberg in schools and colleges when we are taught about pollination. So
yeah.
There's a lot which, as an average person does not understand. And I was one among those. I'm actually really, thrilled to see my own transformation after the process of filming started.
That's great. So how many species of bees do we have in India? And apart from, the obvious hives, where else do they reside? In the ground, I've read? So I was surprised.
Right. So there are over 700 species of bees in India. Okay.
Wow.
And here I have to make a distinction between solitary bees and social bees. The bees that we generally see, on advertisements or on cute emojis or cartoons is the honeybee. And of the honeybee itself, we have about 5 different kinds in India. Okay. Mm-hmm. And the rest of it are all solitary bees. Okay. And solitary bees are nest in a variety of places. So it could be old dead wood, it could be soil, it could be any of the wild spaces, you name it, they construct, some of them construct little nests of them with leaves and twigs and things like that. Some of them burrow into dead wood and create little nooks for themselves. The social bees, which are the honeybees, they nest in these beehives, so which is what we are very familiar with, and we see these big beehives on balconies, on water tanks, on trees. So these are the social bees, and they nest in large numbers. So there are tens of thousands of them in one hive, right?
Mm.
So so this is the first distinction, which is that one of the one set are social bees and the other set are solitary bees, which nest in a variety of spaces, but they all basically live alone. Okay, the social bees live in societies, just like us. Yeah.
Okay. Well.
So even in social bees, like so we have, like I was saying, that there are five kinds of honeybees which are found in India. So you have this is called the Apis. Okay, Apis is the honeybee. And so you have the Apis dorsata, which is a rock bee, which most of the people in the cities are very familiar with. They are quite frightened of them because they're quite temperamental. And you see these huge, gigantic, 2 feet by 3 feet hives. Then you have the Apis laboriosa, which is found in the Himalayan region.
Mm-hmm.
And that is a kind of a cousin of the dorsata. Then you have Apis andreniformis, which is found in the northeast area. Then Apis floria, which you can find in Bangalore and all the cities, but people don't really notice them that much because they hide in bushes or they are in trees. They have, more rounder sort of and smaller hives. And then there is the Apis serrana. Apis serrana is in India traditionally used for beekeeping because they are the only cavity nesting bees found in India. In 1983, Apis mellifera, which is a European honeybee, was introduced by the government in order to promote bee farming, honeybee farming.
Right.
So these are the varieties which are generally found here. So the distinction between cavity nesting and open nesting is that cavity nesting can be also used for beekeeping, essentially.
That's so interesting. We hear of animal corridors and migratory flight paths for birds, and more commonly for the monarch butterflies. But what about bees? Where do they come from, and where did they go from here?
So again, if you are a ground nesting or a tree cavity or a tree hollow nesting solitary bee species, then you don't really go anywhere. You just mm-hmm. live in that little area and you survive there.
All right.
They are not migratory.
Uh-huh.
And not as far as I know. And whereas in the case of other honeybees like Floria, again, there is no migratory behavior as such.
Mm-hmm.
Serrana is a cavity nesting bee. Not heard of their migration. I have not heard of it. The only migratory honeybee in this lot is the Apis dorsata. And
okay.
Apis dorsata, the study is also at very early stages now. We haven't really found out how far do they migrate, where do they go. These are slightly difficult also considering the size of these insects.
Mm.
But there was one study which has happened which is available online if you look, by some scientists in Sri Lanka, who say that these bees can travel up to 200 kilometers. So no concrete evidence has happened in India, but there is an understanding that there are two kinds of migrations that dorsata bees do.
Mm-hmm.
One is short-term migrations, which are in search of forage. So let's say that there is eucalyptus trees or some other flowering trees are in plenty during one season.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, and once that forage of that season is over, then the bees would migrate to a shorter distance to find more food for their huge, colony.
Hmm.
Right, because they are tens of thousands of them in one beehive, and so they need a lot of food to take care of their progeny and their the whole hive. So they need to constantly find good food sources as well as good water sources.
Okay.
So they keep moving. Now they do a long range migration, which is generally just before the onset of the monsoons, and you can see that, anecdotally, I can tell you that because there are no research papers that have been published on it. There is some work in progress. So anecdotally speaking, we do know that the honeybee colonies in the city, they disappear just before monsoons, and then they return back in the month of October. So from October to about March end, you would see bee colonies in Bangalore. I'm talking about Bangalore because it's my city. I understand what's happening here, and I'm sure that similar patterns are perhaps maybe observed in, you know, let's say Gurgaon or Bombay or wherever. All of these cities, I do get, you know, people do reach out to me and they say that we have bees and what should we do? That's how I know that there are, the dorsatas are, colonies are there all over urban centers in different parts of India.
Yeah.
So, yeah. So yeah. They do, so in terms of, you talked about, you know, a corridor. So there is a nectar corridor, which I think, again, since I'm not a scientist, I cannot kind of speak about it in a very informative way. But from my understanding, that there is a nectar corridor, which is between October to March in Bangalore. That's when all the, you know, the Western Ghats, all the trees, endemic trees are blooming. And there's plenty of food and there's rich source of food available to these bees. And that's when they also do their, you know, the colony multiplication and so on and so forth.
Wow. It'd be interesting to have an e-bee just like we have, you know, e-bird.
Yeah, so there is some talks about that, and somewhat it has been developed as well, but not so extensively, but it has not been launched yet by the NCBS.
Mm-hmm.
I think we are planning to do it, but yeah, there is some delay on their part. I don't know if it's really an EB thing. It's mainly more, because, you know, scientists, they find it very difficult to track colonies, so big citizens to actually monitor and spot the beehives, and when they leave and when they come back, that kind of data could be very important and helpful to the scientists. India Biodiversity Portal, India Biodiversity Portal has, I have seen some bee sightings, and people do put up what kind of bees they've spotted, where they've spotted.
Okay, that's the place to go then.
But it is not as widespread. You're right, because, you know, it's, I was telling my friend as well, like, you know, we go bird watching. I mean, if we go bee watching, I'm sure we'd spot so many different kinds of bees, and if we then read up about them, it'll be interesting for us as well, you know?
Yeah. You know, the thing is, it's about 12 degrees over here. It's really cold, and I'm still seeing bees. So sometimes they're just trapped in the house, so... it's interesting you spoke about them being around from October. So I was thinking, even in such a cold climate, but I guess they're Himalayan bees. Yeah.
Yeah. So where are you right now?
I am in Ranikhet, Uttarakhand.
Okay. You must be seeing the local bees of that place.
Right.
Whichever they are.
Yeah. So, you know, even elephants are wary of beehive activity. So in Africa, they actually use bee pheromones to drive away elephants. So tell us why we ordinary humans shouldn't be afraid of bees.
See, I get asked this question, you know, because people think that I'm out to tell people that don't be scared of bees. I don't want people to be not scared or scared. That's your choice. But I just want people to understand and respect them, because they are also at heart wild creatures. So how do you, the only way to avoid fear is if you try to understand where they're coming from and what is their nature like, what is their inherent behavior, right?
Mm.
And once we understand their behavior and their pattern and what they are all about, then we wouldn't feel the sense of fear. Like, now, even a tiger in the jungle, we would be, we are fearful, but we're also respectful, you know?
Sure.
So these insects also deserve that degree of reverence, is what I feel.
Right.
Because they do a lot, right?
Yeah.
And just being, I'm scared of bees because they're going to sting. But yes, even a dog will sting if you, if you kind of trouble it, right? Every creature that's wild at heart is going to come from a place where it has an inherent response to distress. And bees are no different in that sense.
So respect is the word.
Yeah, exactly.
Rajni, could you briefly tell us, you know, about life in a beehive? I mean, we've all read about it and stuff. You know, about the queen, the drones, the worker bees, which are all female, by the way. Why am I not surprised? And their roles and seasonality, etc.
Yeah, so it's a female-centric matrilineal system followed in a beehive. And you have the queen bee, who is the whole and heart and soul of the hive. And everything, all the bees and all the activities that take place in the beehive is taking into consideration her protection and her conservation. Okay, so so she's at the very heart. And then you have the worker bees who play in their lifetime a variety of roles. Okay, so they have roles like nurse bees, then they have roles like guard bees, and there are foragers who go out and forage for food and water. And then you have the drones, whose only job is to mate with the queen when she is ready for mating. And their life cycle is also very interesting, because the queen lives for 3 to 4 years, and the worker bees, they live for several months, maybe 3 to 4 months, not more. And the drone dies the moment mating happens.
Mm.
Okay? Mm. So like I said, the queen is at the heart of the whole colony. And that's why it's also important that when you have a beehive on your balcony or a tree, and you know you are scared, you want irrationally scared, you just want it removed, you have to use methods where the queen bee isn't affected and she survives. Because if she survives, she can go on and make another hive in a matter of a very short time. But if the queen dies, which means it's the end of that entire colony as it stands.
Wow. You know, according to the WWF website, about 90% of all wild plants and 75% of leading global crops depend on animal pollinators. One out of every 3 mouthfuls of our food depend on pollinators. I mean, I don't know the latest figures. I got this from the website. In Bangalore itself, I know several beehives are removed, you know, every day. That's just one city. It makes you wonder how endangered bees are in India, whether they are listed by the IUCN, and also what happens if all the bees were to disappear one day. Is there a cascading effect, like wolves save rivers?
Like at one time, we'll have at least 10 hives together. Okay, because one of the things about Dorsada bees, like if it's going wild also, they build nest aggregates.
Mm.
You won't just see one beehive on a tree, you see several on a tree. Okay, so in some sense, in the cities, when the Dorsata bees make their nest, the city apartments are like nest aggregates for them. It's like a large tree on which all these cousins are building their nests. Okay, so at one time when a bee remover is called, he would maximize his time, you know, he will remove at one stretch about 6 of them. So let's say there are 20,000 high-rise apartments in Bangalore, and there are about 6 to 8 bee hives in the given season. So you can just make a guess on how many beehives are being removed in the flow period, in the nectar flow period.
So
it's a crazy shocking number in any case. The amount of the number of beehives that are removed routinely. Right? That's one part of it. Then, is it listed in the IUCN? No, it's not listed in the IUCN, because there is no data that says that these bees are under threat.
Okay.
Or they are under... Yeah, there is no data. In India, in fact, there is no data at all. Like, there's no data about even the number of bees that we have. Like, the kinds of bees, the bee species that we have, we don't have. We have very incomplete data. Whatever data we have, it's a very old, like, British Times data. Now there is work, like there are some amazing people like Dr. Bilawadi who are generating, he's a taxonomist, and they are generating data and they are collecting all the records. But there is still a lot of bee species yet, you know, waiting to be discovered. When we don't know enough, we don't know whether they are dying. Mm-hmm. But anecdotally, I can tell you that from, you know, 2015 to 2021, every year, the number of beehives I'm getting in my society have reduced.
Okay.
Okay. Now, if I go to the village, so I was filming in Coorg, and in Coorg, the villagers, the farmers tell that at one time, so around February after Shivratri, they have the bees start coming. And, you know, all the forestries are blooming at that time. And at one time, they would have hundreds, literally hundreds of Dorsata bees on a single tree. And that's how they are. They always come back to the same location year after year after year, right? Because they have something that's called site fidelity. And that's a unique thing about Dorsata bees. And now they, you know, so if this farmer says that 30 years ago we had 100 hives and now we barely see 30 or even, or some years the bees skip altogether. Like in 2020, when I went there, the bees had skipped altogether.
Okay.
You know? So there is an anecdotal kind of anecdotal data that
okay.
Perhaps there is a decline, but then I cannot say if there is a decline. Now, if all the, yeah, so I don't think that that while the forests and the cultivated crops are all dependent on various kind of animal pollination, including bee pollination, how would it have a cascading effect? It would have a cascading effect. In fact, there are a couple of things which are interconnected in this. Because now, bees are a keystone species. Now, the mm-hmm. minute I say that they are a keystone species, if you remove, and you would know that, if you remove a keystone species, or if there is a disturbance in the
right.
keystone species, the whole arc will fall down, right? So, the same is the case with bees, no different. And it's not only honey bees, it's not only Dorsata that I'm partial to, it's all kinds of bees.
Okay. What do you hope to achieve with your documentary, Colonies and Conflict?
I think I want people to see bees in a way that they haven't seen before. I want them to really notice them because people understand what honey is, they consume honey, they consume food, and that's why they survive. And all of that is a result of pollination. All kinds of specialist bees pollinate all kinds of special crops that we are used to eating now, right? Mm. But we don't understand the input or the value of bee pollination, you know, whether it's our food or if it's our forest. So I hope that for a moment, the film would make you stop, think, pause, and just observe the beauty of the bees and what they do to us and what we do to them.
All right.
Yeah. You know, so there are a lot of films that have been made on from the human angle of, you know, how dangerous it is to hunt for honey, right? The honey hunters, they climb on all kinds of cliffs and
this,
harvest honey, right? But this film is not even about honey. It's about the bees. And it's about the other very precious service that the bees give or provide to us.
Excellent. And you've been shooting for quite a few years now, right?
I've been filming since 2019, October. But we had a brief pause because of the pandemic. And
right.
Also it's seasonal. The film is seasonal. I can only film when the bees are around. So there's a, you know, like I said, the flow is October to March. Or to April is the period that I can film. Yeah, other periods during the monsoons, you don't see bees. There's nothing really that I can film at that.
Okay. So could you share a conservation-related word that's significant to you? It could be bee-related or not bee.
I think at the moment, it would be pollination. You know, because I think pollination of our wild spaces, our forests, are all dependent on insects like bees, whether they are social bees or solitary bees. And we need to recognize that if we have to continue to have forest spaces, have safe spaces for our animals, you know, for our biodiversity as such. So pollination it is.
Great. I was hoping it would be. We keep hearing of, you know, putting out sugar, water for bees in summer. You know, I don't know if this is a weird question, but how can we not kill with kindness? Is sugar really... Could you share some guidelines on what not to do?
Yeah, so you don't really need to put sugar water, but what you can do, they'll figure out, right? They'll if the bees are there, they are there because they have found food source nearby. If there is no food source, you would not see the bees there. So don't worry about their food source or their forage and feed them sugar water and all that. But they do need water, especially social bees, because they build these large hives and they have such a huge population. And it gets hot in the summers, they need a lot of water to keep cooling off, right? So what you can do is have a small, shallow kind of bowl and fill it with pebbles and pour a little water and keep it just like you do for birds. You know, you place it for the bees. And if you, you know, the bees will benefit from a drink of water. And the other thing is do not... So the bees are there on your, if they're there on your balcony, they are there for a very short period of time, maybe 3 months, not more than that. So try and not use that balcony, especially if it's Dorsata bees. They are the only ones that build hives on balconies. And close your window meshes and close your curtains by 4:30 in the evening, because these bees are phototactic. They get attracted to light. And they come inside the home. They're actually, the ones that come inside your home are foragers. They are out foraging. And that's when they get attracted by the light, and then they can't break away. They're not, they won't sting you. They are, you know, in distress themselves. So that's, there's another, there's actually a lot about these bees, you know, Dorsata bees, which is very interesting and crazy. I don't know if you have the time for all that, but... Yeah,
no, especially in urban spaces, it's good to know, you know, what you should do and what you shouldn't do.
And let's say that, so when the bees, when they want to build a hive, a bunch of them will come by earlier and they do the recce, and they will see if your balcony or your space is suitable for them. And at that stage, when you see a bunch of them, let's say 50 or 100 bees kind of hanging, like festooning on your balcony, you can light a herbal agarbatti, and the smoke will distress them. And they will think that this is an unsuitable place to build a hive, and they will leave by themselves. The other thing that you can do is, let's say, you know, you were out on a holiday, when you came back and you find this hive, and, you know, one of you is allergic and you can't afford to have a bee sting. So what you can do is light, again, herbal agarbatti, like a lot of dhoop, below the hive for a couple of days, like 2 or 3 days. So what happens is, when the smoke comes, it disturbs the bees, right? So they decide that this is no longer a viable place. And the queen will then stop laying eggs. But they will not fly away immediately. They will take about 15 days, which is a period that they need for all the brood. Anyway, so for the entire, that's the time that they need for the entire brood to emerge, right? So once the entire brood emerges, then the bees fly away to another place. But queen will stop laying egg from the time that the hive decides that this is no longer viable. And then then it's a 2-week waiting period for the brood. And then they leave. So you can try these things, you know, more conservative way, rather than calling pest management and spraying or taking matters in your own hands, because that's quite cruel.
That's fantastic. Thanks for enlightening us about bees. Really nice talking to you, Rajni.
Thank you so much.
I hope you enjoyed listening to Rajni Mani and all about bees as much as I have. Do check out some links about her and the whole transcript for this show on my blog, Earthy Matters. You can listen to Heart of Conservation on many platforms. You can also write to me at earthymatters013@gmail.com. That's earthymatters013@gmail.com. I'm Lalitha Krishnan signing off. Till next time, stay safe, be kind to bees, and do subscribe for more episodes.